I love myself. I want you to love me. When I feel down, I want you above me. I search myself. I want you to find me. I forget myself. I want you to remind me. I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself. Oh, I don't want anybody else. Welcome to Men's Junk, talking about fringe male topics seldom talked about for the betterment of everyone. And I like to touch myself. I don't know if you noticed.
That intro was a little messy, kind of like touching ourselves.
But we're gonna keep it.
Absolutely, the messier the better.
We're not gonna pull out the paper towels. Wow, this is quite the roaring start today.
Crusty.
What?
You started it.
This is like earlier. You're like moist. I like that word, moist.
He was telling me the joys of straight sex, and as a gold star gay, I was both horrified and curious at the same time.
You asked for this.
I did. I literally did.
We were talking about dopamine.
Did you enjoy it? Which ties? There's a connection there.
Dopamine is tied into everything. So we got the idea. We're going to be talking about dopamine today. We got the idea for this podcast. Actually, I saw someone was reading a book called Dopamine Detox, and I read the book, and I thought it had some really pertinent information, and I thought it had some things that were useful.
Absolutely.
And so we thought, why not take some of our experiences and share them with you and maybe help further your understanding of just some of the everyday choices that we make and maybe having a little more awareness around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I read a similar book called Digital Minimalism, which was about dopamine detoxing from social media technology more specifically, but a lot of crossover, a lot of similar strategies.
So I guess, you know, what is dopamine?
Dopamine's one of the neurochemicals that we've got floating around our brain, like serotonin, mm-hmm. like GABA, like epinephrine. There's a whole ton of them. And at the end of the day, it's one of the primary motivators for us. We get a dopamine hit when we engage in activity that we find rewarding and that it encourages us to do that activity more.
Kind of like that muffin you just ate.
Oh, I feel called out. Wow. Yes, totally. I was
you
getting
like
some.
Sat there, you're like,
yes.
I you was... like looked at all these pastries, and I'm like, oh, it's over.
Yeah,
the
it
dopamine
is over.
Spike is happening in this moment.
And that's a valid point too. That you can get, you do get dopamine spikes in anticipation of the reward too,
mm-hmm.
and that's what can trigger the phenomenon of craving. When I was staring at that pastry case, I was like, oh shit, I'm lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting though. We don't really – I don't think we talk about it enough as a society, because I think it's almost subliminal, especially now with social media.
Yes.
Everything – the dopamine is almost baked into everything that we do.
Yes.
If you look at different social media apps, it's almost designed to create a pattern where you're just clicking frantically most of the time.
Well, that's the thing. It's not that it's almost designed that way. It is designed that way. Big tech companies – have on staff behavioral psychologists who know how to hack our dopamine systems, and that's what makes the technology so damn addictive.
So you mean all behavior psychologists aren't just in for the good of everyone?
No, you can use your powers for evil or good. The choice is
yours.
You
could be a dark mage?
Yes, you could be a dark psychology mage.
That is actually kind of terrifying when you think about it.
Yeah, because they know the tools of mental manipulation.
That's, wow, I never really thought about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to sit with that for a second.
Don't worry. Like, I swear I'm like Gandalf the Grey.
An altar with like skulls on it. Yeah. Like, yes, yes. Click more. Yes.
I haven't gone full Saruman with
no?
with my powers. No.
You got the One Ring with you today?
I'm not telling you if I have the precious.
We can't talk about the precious?
Yeah, no.
Oh, goodness. We're such nerds. So I wanted to – actually, for me, I find it really impactful because I'm going to be – like full disclosure, I do not have an ADHD diagnosis. But what I found out is that I have a tendency when I'm withholding from something that I enjoy or that I'm like addicted to, it feels like, you know, when you're young, someone like gives you a balloon and you press in one portion of it and the other part sticks out.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's
absolutely, yeah.
So I don't know if that has I believe it has. It definitely has something to do with dopamine for me, because what I do is I do this replacement behavior. So, you know, OK, I'm not going to watch porn. I'm going to abstain from porn. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. And then I go and I'm like walking down the street. I'm like, oh, yeah. Sushi. It's really good.
Yeah.
And those things, they start, it's the weirdest thing. And I'll get into it actually with my experience with the book. I actually found that pattern replicated itself. So if it's not, you know, I'll try to get my dopamine from somewhere because it seems like every time I don't know if it's the size or the magnitude of the dopamine I'm getting from these other places, but it feels like I'm always trying to replace it.
Yeah, and the speed, too. That's key as well.
Really? Okay.
The metaphor that I like is like the game of whack-a-mole. You knock down one of those moles, and another damn mole pops up, and then you got to whack down the next mole and everything. And that's called cross-addiction.
Yeah.
That can happen with substance use, but it can also happen with, like you said, with behaviors, too, where it's like you're denying yourself one thing, and then just your brain is going like, what else is going to give me that quick rush that I'm now missing?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you've probably had some experience with that personally.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what is the, like in a clinical setting, like what is, say somebody else is out there and they're playing whack-a-mole.
Yep.
They're like hitting the one thing. It's like, okay, I'm not going to watch porn. Then they go eat. And then they go eat. The eating, they're like, oh, I don't want to do eating. Then they, you know, they stop eating. Then they find something else. I mean, is there an intervention from a counselor, therapist standpoint that would be useful in that place? Like, I'm actually speaking a little bit for myself. Like, I'm considering medication because I think that I'm really interested in a world where I'm not playing whack-a-mole.
Where you feel that freedom from not chasing the next dopamine high.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it can feel like you're out of control just pursuing these momentary pleasures.
This is over 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I totally relate to you. When I was new in sobriety, I forget if I've shared this on the podcast before, but I would go to different AA meetings where I knew that people were celebrating like their sober time and having cake.
Yeah.
So that I would get like the free sugar rush. I was like, I was on the cake circuit, like getting
free
cake.
You're on the cake circuit.
Totally.
What?
Totally. I totally replaced.
You've never actually told me about this.
It's my dirty little secret. I just became a sugar junkie instead. So, to answer your question about like,
so you do feel seen about this muffin?
Absolutely. I was totally called out by the muffin.
This is good, but you know,
it was a sugar-free muffin. Damn it!
But if we always go to the coffee shop before we do the podcast, then in a way, we're reinforcing the podcast behavior. So we're recording more episodes. So I should actually encourage you to eat more sugar.
Wait, what? No.
When we do podcasts.
I see where you're going with this.
So then subconsciously your brain's going to be like, yeah, we should do a podcast.
Right, because now I'm like, every time I binge on ice
like,
cream,
maybe,
I'm like,
maybe I'll end up getting a muffin. Like, yeah. This is
well,
good.
In all seriousness, though, this is This is how a lot of companies operate, including social media companies, is that they know that elements of their product are reinforcing that way. And
okay.
So, yeah, like things like notifications and getting likes on the app and everything is rewarding. And that's why they have them in the apps, in the various programs. But sorry, what would be the
intervention? Like, what if you're someone like me who, you know, if it's not porn, it's food. If it's not food, it's something else. If it's, you know, you could just go down these weird rabbit holes where you constantly just feel like you're chasing your tail.
Yeah, part of it is having a degree of self-compassion around the process so that you're not then beating yourself up for substituting one thing for another, because oftentimes that shame leads to the behavior actually amplifying.
Yeah.
That like, hey, like for example, in my case, like giving up alcohol and drugs and for a while binging on sugar, I consider that progress. Like, yes, I was, you know, seeking dopamine elsewhere, but from a harm reduction perspective, I was absolutely making progress.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it chilled. My sugar use chilled because it was no longer serving me either. And so as you kind of gradually build up the tools of recovery and different emotional regulation and distress tolerance skills, eventually your mind lets go of these like secondary habits as well.
I think it's a really important thing actually to mention is that if you're looking for a long-term lifestyle changes, it's not often something that's just going to happen overnight.
No, not at all. Yeah.
And I mean, and I can say like as somebody who's, you know, successfully lost at one point actually it was like 100 pounds. I was pretty proud. You know, it was not like an overnight thing. And like even being plant-based, that was not an overnight thing either. Like it was like we shift the goalpost and we shift the goalpost and we shift the goalpost. And then 5 years later, you're like, oh, how did I get here? But yeah, the self-compassion piece I think is super important too, because what I find is when people have a hard time with dieting and food, when they make a mistake, they tend to beat themselves up, and then that just leads to the whole, absolutely.
And same thing with substance use too. Like it can be hard to fight against that all or nothing thinking, but as much as you can, being gentle with yourself that like, yeah, of course I don't want to repeat that. However, beating myself up is going to fuel the next relapse.
Exactly. So what about you? Like what's your, like, I guess that kind of describes my experience with dopamine in a nutshell, like this constant whack-a-mole situation. How about you?
I'd say it's, like the metaphor that I would use is kind of like waves.
Okay.
There are times when it's at a relatively low ebb, and then in times, typically when I'm going through like a stressful period in my life mm-hmm. where like, yeah, I'm reaching out for those quick fixes more, like the beginning of the COVID pandemic where I was like,
okay, I got it.
I was like social media and sugar just give it all to me.
So oh, that's so interesting. Okay, so I'm literally just thinking out loud. So that kind of makes sense though when you think about it, because if you're under a lot of stress and you're not getting your dopamine in like a, I had this idea earlier. I'm going to introduce this idea later.
Sure.
It was a hilarious idea I made up after reading this book. It was like, I only want my dopamine free range and organic,
absolutely.
And I want like all the good stuff that only serves me.
Yeah, and that's a helpful reframe for it, is not to demonize dopamine or any of the other neurochemicals. Like they're in our brain for a reason. They're there for a reason. It's like, what do you want the sources of that to be?
Exactly.
Do you want it to be exercise and sex and hanging out with people?
Like things you enjoy, like things you really want to have.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally. So, yeah. So I guess in that sense, where were you with that? Sorry, I lost track for a sec there.
That's okay. I was just talking about like the kind of the ebbs and flows, a wave.
So when lately, we're not getting good. This like quote unquote, I call this like organic dopamine. Organic vegan free range.
Yeah, we'll go for the fast food instead.
When you're getting more of that, you don't really have a desire to get the other stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
And this is all theory, really. Because I think like what I've noticed from a lot of the literature is it's not perfectly understood how a lot of this works.
No, it's still a developing science for sure. I mean, it's still in the grand scheme of things, you know, relatively recent that we can do these brain scans in different contexts and kind of figure out what's going on neurochemically. That it's still developing for sure. But there's absolutely some truth to if we're feeling emotionally regulated overall in our lives, that these other behaviors and substances just aren't going to feel as tempting. And,
I mean, everyone on the planet is pretty emotionally regulated, right? Right?
No.
Right? Like we're just, everyone's just a happy little carrot.
No.
Just happy little potatoes.
Like this could be a whole conversation in itself, like the systemic factors that lead people to feeling stressed or depressed or anxious or trauma, et cetera, that there are both like individual level and systemic factors that lead people to feeling like they need to seek out these behaviors or substances.
So if, you know, I'm someone who's listening to this podcast and I have a challenging time with emotional regulation, how do I know? I mean, we'll get into this, I think, a little further, but how do I know when maybe it's something I should take a look at? or something that I should intervene in?
A couple different ways. One is looking externally in terms of impacts in your life. Like, is it getting in the way of your close personal relationships? Is it impacting your ability to, like, focus at school mm-hmm. or to work or to engage in hobbies? Like, what are the impacts? Mm-hmm. The other way is just more internally. Like, do you just feel, like, exhausted all the time or cranky all the time or yeah. miserable all the time? Like, what's going on internally for you?
Actually, interestingly enough, dopamine is also really intrinsically linked with movement as well, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times when I hear people aren't doing well, I said, just move.
Yes.
Like, I don't really care how you move.
Yes.
Like, go for a walk.
Yes.
Jump. Dance.
Yeah.
Like, just move, period.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the book that you read.
So it was, again, it's called Digital Minimalism by a guy named Cal Newport. He's a professor of computer science, and he's taken a look at the habits that we've quickly fallen into over the past decade or so since social media has become such a predominant force in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes up with strategies, some of them, you know, pretty damn concrete. For kind of countering, you know, your social media addiction if you mm-hmm. see yourself having problematic use.
Well, that was me.
Yeah. And again, like I said, especially during the height of the pandemic, that was absolutely me as well.
Yeah. So to be clear, because I have my own business. I'm a personal trainer. I'm a life coach. I do mostly personal training right now because that's been my bread and butter.
Sure.
But typically the way my schedule works is I'll have a few clients in the morning mm-hmm. and then I'll have a couple or three, you know, in the later in the day. And there's this like middle ground where this is so wild. I would sit down for lunch. I had this planner. I'm like, I'm going to sit down for lunch. And then I'd open YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then I would watch that video. Like, wow, that felt really good. And I'd open another one. And then, wow, that felt really good. And next thing you know, it was like, you know, I would evaporate an hour and a half of my day.
You'd feel just lost there.
And then I'd kind of like, it felt almost like waking up at like another hour and be like, what did I just do to my last like hour and a half? It's kind of like sex addiction too. Like if you're kind of in that bubble,
yeah,
you step out of it and you go, whoa.
What just happened?
Like what was I just doing there? Like and so this is actually why I even entertained reading the book in the first place was because I realized that I had a bit of a problem. And it wasn't, you know, a lot of these things, this is like the thing I think is really interesting, and I think you bring it up a fair bit, is that when we talk about people with addiction, we often talk about people like on the street.
Yes, there's a certain image that comes to mind.
You know, those are the people that are addicted to meth or addicted to fentanyl but some of the addictions I think that we're talking about are addictions that just – they're not the kind that you're going to see on the street, but they're the kind that can like erode a life to make it merely average.
Right.
Like you're just going to have an average life. You won't actually go after the things you really want.
Yeah.
You're just going to like do your stuff. Then you'll get depressed at some point. You eat a bunch. You have a heart attack. Okay, maybe I took that a little further. But,
it's insidious.
It's so insidious. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, especially in, like, we were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I mean, in North America, if you have a heart attack, no one's going to blink. No one's going to ask how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to be like, oh, another heart attack.
Makes sense.
It's so, like, normalized in our society. Yeah. And so these, like, little insidious addictions, I think are sneaky evil.
Yes. Yeah. And because as you said, it's not like you're going to necessarily have like the big glaring negative consequence. It's going to be more that feeling of time wasted, a bit less socially connected, which is ironic.
You might get everything done. You might have like an okay life.
Yeah.
But maybe you won't get after your goals as much as you might.
Yeah.
Maybe you won't tackle a new skill or something like exciting that you want to do because you're like, oh, I don't have time. Yeah. We all know those people. They say, oh, I don't have time. I don't have time.
Yeah, I've been like, sometimes I am one of those people.
Yeah, of course.
And then when you look at my cell phone use and before
I want to talk about my cell phone. Still needs work.
And fair enough. Before I started, you know, it's been a few weeks since I've been implementing some of the strategies from the book.
Oh, you have? Okay, good.
Yeah, before I did that though, I was easily spending 20 to 30 hours a week.
That's where I was at.
And it's I don't have enough time, but like, really.
But you're like just chonking time.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And an exercise I like to do with my clients is an existential exercise, like them imagining themselves at the end of their life, reflecting back on what was important for them. And if I reflect back and go like, he spent 30 hours a week on his cell phone. Like, I don't want that on my tombstone. I don't want that on my obituary.
What do you mean? Like, that's that guy yelled really loud on Twitter. Wow, that guy.
I want somebody
that guy was really angry all the time. Yeah, anger. Woo.
He nailed it.
Anger gets your dopamine going too.
Absolutely. Any kind of intense, energizing emotion, but anger, especially like righteous anger, which is something that you can absolutely feel on social media.
Yeah, that's right, Matthew.
It feels very fueling.
I know. I'm so smart.
But yeah, I was just going to say, like, I don't want my obituary to say like, oh, he was like an expert at Angry Birds because of all the time. You know what I mean?
What do you mean? Like, that's like a big deal. He was the Angry Birds world champion. His name is...
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm just saying in terms of balance, is that what I want? My
Gold Star 3-2-1 was an epic Angry Birds player.
Gold Star Gay 3-2-1.
Gold Star Gay 3-2-1. Rest in peace. You know, it's actually super funny segue. There was actually I do go on an MMA message board called Sherdog, and there was this gentleman who passed away. I'm kidding you not, and he is every time a certain fighter gets mentioned, he loved this fighter. Everyone's like, rest in peace, positive balance. Like, isn't that like wild though? Like,
that is
we
wild.
Do not know this person whatsoever. No, we do not know what his job is. We don't know like what he did. We just know that he loved BJ Penn.
It's like, okay.
Like, but it's interesting, right? Like, I guess that's a really weird thought, you know? Did they actually know this person? Or is this just like an idea, a concept, like this is only a piece of their life, a very, very small piece, maybe a bigger piece.
True, we don't really know this person at all.
Maybe he's just like an MMA fanatic and it does replicate him, but we don't really know. We should ask AI.
No, let's not go
there. Let's talk to the chatbot. The chatbot will give us all the answers. Why even listen to this podcast? There. Just talk to the chatbot, tell you everything.
Well, you were saying a moment ago that you know, you're hesitant to even kind of look at the number on your cell phone. So
look at it.
Okay.
I just don't want to share it.
I see.
I'm ashamed.
Okay. There's some
it's
phone
just over 6
there.
Hours and it's like, yeah, like it's, and that's like daily, but that also includes like work stuff, like the stuff I do, but sometimes it's just, it's weird. Like I said, once again, it's like the whoopee cushion thing, right?
Yeah.
So I got rid of YouTube, I got rid of Instagram, I got rid of Twitter, right? And I'm like, try not to doom scroll at all. Like, that's been the struggle. Mm. And now I'm on the internet more.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I just found another app.
Mm-hmm.
It's not social media, I'm on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And again, from a harm reduction perspective, like, maybe that's okay or more okay.
Yeah.
That, you know, if depending if you're finding what you're researching worthwhile.
My theory is if I get bored enough of the internet, then I will change my behavior at some point.
Yeah. And there was a point that the book brought up is having replacement activities ready to go, which is similar to the kind of thinking that I encourage clients to engage in when they're giving up substances, is that like if it's just you waving your finger at yourself going like, oh, don't do that. Like, well, good luck with that. And you are likely going to find something else. So it's like, well, what is going to be the replacement behavior during those breaks that you have in between clients? Like, okay, what would you like to do instead? And can you make that more available?
I will not tell you what I was thinking of first time.
Okay. This is a judgment-free zone, Sam.
No, I'm just such a brat, you know? It's like, I just went to like the most like darkest place. I was like, we're just going to watch a massive amount of porn.
Okay.
It's like, Seb, shut up. What are you saying?
It's like, hey, if you find that meaningful, then go for it. But no, I know you're joking. But,
yeah, of course. Okay, so you read this book, and what was the takeaway for you? Like, what was your Because you've obviously been doing some of the techniques.
Yes.
So, I mean, in
quite successfully.
Layman's terms, layperson's terms, what have been the techniques that have been recommended and you've been implementing?
He suggests going through app by app, program by program.
Ooh, interesting.
Asking yourself, what value does this contribute, and is it the most effective way to reach those values? So, for example,
interesting. Okay.
Like, legitimately nowadays, like, you know, a lot of people do use social media for work, and you know, like
WhatsApp business is like my like number two on my list right now.
Yeah, and so, like, if you're legitimately using it for work purposes or purposes that you find meaningful, then
or bringing people together, yeah.
Absolutely.
So you, one by one, like, you just go through every single one.
Go through each one and ask yourself honestly about, like, what is the value here? And if the value is really, like, distraction, boredom, you know, it's like that's
–
for me, that's not enough of a justification. That's not work. That's not facilitating in-person connections. That's – those are the kinds of things that he suggests are, like, you know, values that could justify certain app use. And then, though, you've got to further ask yourself, like, okay, maybe I am using Facebook to facilitate connection.
Okay.
Am I actually, or am I, you know, spending hours, like, you know, refreshing the feed and looking for, like, the next inflammatory post, and you know what I mean? Like,
that's so interesting.
So you've got to be super honest with yourself around what value they're bringing to the table. And then turning your smartphone into a dumb phone as much as possible. I no longer have Facebook and Twitter on my phone.
Really?
When I'm wanting to go I log on Twitter. Yeah.
But then somebody, like, posted something in one of the discords I'm in, and it was like a Twitter thing. And I was like, oh, because I wanted to see it.
And that is the uphill battle, is that,
because, like, there's a lot of news and, like, relevant information that seems to be going through those channels. So
But that's why I'm saying it's not necessarily about totally abstaining from it, putting it in a format that's a bit harder to access. So it being on my laptop
makes it, like,
I can't just whip that out at a coffee shop. And
I've only been using YouTube on my laptop.
There you go. That's another example of, it's not that you have to completely say no to the behavior. It's more making it a little bit more challenging to
access it. For us people of difficulty with moderation.
Totally. And to normalize it, one study in this book was wild, saying that the average teenager spends about 9 hours per day on their screen nowadays.
That seems like a really conducive way of raising kids.
Well, yeah. I mean, going back to your point about getting
physical
movement.
9 hours a day?
Yeah. And then if you think they're sleeping for, you know, approximately like 8-ish hours a day.
It's so weird. So that's 17 hours. That gives you...
About 5 hours
at school.
Totally.
6 hours at school? Eight to three?
Then how much time is being spent, like, you know, eating meals, getting ready for school?
Kind of terrifying.
Well, yeah. And so it's not just an us problem. It's a societal problem.
But, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, different generations look at other generations and they go, oh, I wish I had that, you know? Like, for instance, our generation, like, I'm 40. You're close to my age.
Yep.
And we remember a time when this didn't exist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, I was out playing in the park, like, all the time.
Yeah, your parents were just like, yo.
Just be back for dinner kind of thing.
See you in 3 hours.
Yeah.
Go be busy.
Totally.
Jump in some sand and get dirty and do all the things. Don't get in trouble. We don't want to get, you know, then it's different.
Totally, yeah. Don't go into a stranger's van. But other than that.
Yeah, like the obvious. yeah.
But they offered me can't. Sorry, that went dark.
Ice cream. Yeah, oh, God. Oh, God. Okay, can I just, like, touch on this fun little memory?
What? Okay.
Every time that freaking ice cream truck came up. You know, and you're like. So Eddie Murphy did a little stand-up bit on it. And you know, you just lost your mind as a kid, right? You're just like, ice cream. You run to the window. You're like, Mom, throw the change. And you only have, like, you know, once that, you know, I'm sure you went through this, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Like, it was ridiculous. It was like a panic. Like, that's that.
Yeah, totally. What if it passed by?
You know.
Which is, like, totally related to what we're talking about, the fear of missing out.
But you know what's really great about it, though, is that, like, we – one thing, there's a really good TED Talk by, the name is not coming to me right now, but we had the opportunity when we were young to have pleasant surprises.
Yeah.
Because the expectations are so high with entertainment, with, you know, anything. You can research it. It's kind of...
It's at your fingertips kind of thing.
Right? Yeah. You can always get the thing that you want. Like, you know, like if you want to go watch, you know, whatever, you can watch anything you want in a minute. You want to learn something, you learn it in a minute. Mm-hmm. I feel like this generation may have lost some of the pleasant surprises that we had as kids. Because when that ice cream truck came around, like, we lost our mind. And it was great because it was just this like celebratory, like amazing thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if people are pleasantly surprised as much anymore.
I would agree with that. And to your earlier point that, you know, there are trade-offs that like, you know, hey, in some ways it's fantastic that there are these tools. And maybe we should have said this at the outset that when we're talking about social media, it's not to demonize it. There are definitely benefits to it. I can stay in touch with people that I met in my trip to Thailand, that I met in when I worked in Uganda. Like I could not really do that before.
Yeah,
at least not
that makes
nearly
sense.
As easily. But that because these technologies are so new, we're still, as a society, navigating our relationships with them.
And it's weird because for the longest time, I actually thought the generation that was younger than us was going to be like the sexually liberated generation.
Yeah, they ain't getting laid.
Yeah.
They're the rates of sex are
like,
way
down. I just assume that like, you know, nobody like told me the combination on the combination lock on how to pleasure the opposite sex. You know, like it was like, okay, you're with this person, figure it out. But
it's
now
been the total opposite.
I thought actually that we would be this like they'd look at us and be like, oh wow, boomers, old guys.
Yeah,
they don't know what they're doing. But I feel like almost like it went the opposite way.
Yeah, because social anxiety rates are so much higher now. That actually talking to and dating the opposite sex has become more challenging for younger people, and the fact that they can kind of replace authentic sexual connection with porn so much easier than we could. Like, remember, you know, trying to watch porn by dial-up? Like,
oh, it was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, talk about delayed gratification.
You didn't even know what everything looked like.
Yeah,
it was like
the pixels are coming in.
Yeah, here we go.
Okay.
Or you had, like, the slide.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's going down. It's going down.
What do we have here?
Oh, it's panties. Shoot! Why is she wearing panties? I have to load another one. Okay. And we wonder why we're etching now. Here we are.
Yeah.
We're just replicating.
Well, and it's just, the fact that things are so easily accessible has ironically, I think, made it, you know, more challenging to connect either sexually or just, you know, kind of socially in general as well.
So one thing I know that hasn't really changed is like this concept of like hustle culture and, you know, if you want to be successful, you got to work hard. You got to get things done. And it's funny because one of the things they say, like I've been listening to some podcasts and just trying to get myself more motivated and get things done. Mm. And one of the simplest advice I gave, because I'm thinking about somebody here who's listening to this podcast and they're like 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they got over a porn addiction. Maybe they don't have that many friends. And I think we almost have to treat it like a job, like schedule in a friend appointment, like literally put it into your schedule, just like a business appointment, just like any other appointment, because especially as men, we suck at this.
Yeah.
Like we're horrible at getting back to each other. We're not, you know, that's why apparently there's actually, I think I talked about this on another episode. There's literally men working in woodworking places. Like they just send them over there so they can like start befriending each other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we got to make more time and effort to actually see each other and to start having those in-person interactions. Cause I feel like we're on the brink of something and it's not that good.
No, not at all. Like a whole bunch
hours,
of
geez.
Yeah. Well, and kind of to your point about scheduling it in, if you don't schedule it in, it's so easy for us to go to the path of least resistance, and the phone is right there.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have a scheduled in, hang out with a friend, partake in some kind of hobby or volunteering or what have you, religious or spiritual services, like whatever your jam is. Yeah. If you don't have that scheduled in, it's just so easy to pick up the phone or the video game console or whatever.
And, I mean, you could schedule days to do nothing too.
Totally.
Like that's the thing, right? Like is these phones and all this information makes us feel like we're so busy. We can also just schedule a day. Just be like, I'm going to do nothing this day. Actually, this is one of my most important times of my week because I work with people all day and I'm like, I'm super introverted. I love people. But
extroverted, you mean?
I'm extroverted, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Sorry.
That's
wow, I'm dyslexic today. How many diagnoses can we get today?
Yeah.
I just find that like I need a good day to just decompress.
And that's another interesting part of the book too, is the importance of solitude, whether you're introverted or extroverted. Now, granted, introverts need it, you know, on average more than extroverts do. Mm-hmm. However, that's when so much emotional regulation happens those moments. That's when a lot of creative thinking happens, out of the box thinking.
Yeah, of course.
That not being bombarded by this external stimuli from other people is incredibly important. And if we're always looking at the notifications on the phone, we're not getting that.
So have we lost the ability to be bored? Have we lost the value? Like, has it just been kind of it seems like everybody just wants to be stimulated all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And boredom is seen as the enemy.
Yeah, it's the enemy. Yeah, yeah. Because you have to sit with your thoughts. You got to sit by yourself. Maybe you're not having a good day, so I'd rather be busy.
And there's this fear of being stuck in that. It's like, no, something will occur to you. It's not that you're going to be stuck staring at the wall for 8 hours or whatever. It's like, no, something will occur to you, and actually something more creative and likely
could come out of that. Yeah,
totally.
So I actually read a different book. Dopamine Detox. There's actually a couple books with the same name. Mine's the female author. It's not coming to me. That's okay. But one of the things they recommended, and I think you have some personal experience with this because I actually didn't go this route at all, was to – I'm going to give you a like hyperbolic version of what she was suggesting, which was basically like to – lock yourself in a room and turn off your phone and don't drink coffee and don't eat sweets and don't eat junk food. And it was just like this very extreme version of like, just take a day or 2 days of just like, not actual dopamine, because that's impossible.
Right. Again, it's a neurochemical that we all have. Yeah. But these external easy routes.
And it was reframed as a reset. Even like friend things. No, like this is like literal.
Oh, so like no hanging out with friends?
Not even. Like it was like,
shit.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
I apologize to, but I literally just was listening to this part. Like it was like literally like a day of just like, or even 2 days. Like even your work emails, you get somebody else to deal with them.
Interesting. Okay.
So you give yourself like a day or two, and then you basically, it's kind of like a reset. It's kind of put in that kind of way.
There's elements of that I agree with. I just think, at least the way that you're describing it, it's like
it was pretty extreme, right?
Yeah, too extreme that most people just aren't going to do it.
Yes. So in the second part of the book, it talks about more moderate concepts,
fair enough.
Kind of like what your book was suggesting.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I've been implementing is trying to – I made up the term. Apparently there's only like 3 people who use this tag on Instagram before me, which is like organic dopamine. Like what does that mean? But to me basically like it's something that is – it actually aligns with my goals and visions, right? It actually aligns with what I want to do, what I really want to do, not just in the short term but also in the long term.
Yeah, and I like that approach because it sounds more sustainable, because the thing with – any kind of detox, whether it's a food detox, drug detox, or what you're saying, dopamine detox, is that, sure, there can be short-term benefits to that, but it's so easy to go back to old behavior if you aren't finding a path that's more aligned.
Well, yeah, you need a replacement behavior, I think, to kind of get you on the right track.
Totally. Otherwise, you're just kind of going through these periods of, like, these crashes, but then going back to where you were before, kind of thing.
I broke my brain the first 2 days.
Oh, yeah? Because you tried to
God.
Do... Okay.
No,
tell me
like,
about that.
I... I told myself that I wasn't going to go on all these social media things. So that was like my number one thing.
Yep.
Porn is something I've talked about in other podcasts. It's really, I feel like it's mostly under control. Mm. It has, you know, it's like anything. It has little like flare-ups here and there. But I have that mostly under control. Mm. Social media was
the big one.
Basically the big one. Food is like one of those things that, you know, once in a while I'll go and, you know, I'll have even the like bad food I eat technically is like good food. It's like healthy bad food. You know, like people look at me, they're like,
right,
yeah, Seb, it's really bad, and like laugh at me, right? Like you're ridiculous. But that's just, you know, that's what works for me. Yep. I look at a Subway sandwich and I gain 5 pounds. Like that's just the way my body works. So social media was like this giant crux, this thing that like, and it was weird because I'd wake up some mornings, and this is one of the reasons I started doing this, is I'd wake up some mornings and I would just feel dread.
Mm.
And I didn't know why. And I'm like, okay, I need like some kind of an intervention. Like, because to me, which is also talked about in the book, the dopamine I was getting from all these external sources was hijacking my motivation to do the things that I really wanted to do.
Totally, because you're getting the easy rush.
It's easy, right?
Yeah,
so I'm hooking myself up to this thing, and I'm like, oh. And then I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, like I'm not really. But if you're bored, you're way more motivated. I know that sounds horrible.
Absolutely.
So the first 2 days, I actually was sitting there, and I'll be honest. Like I went to the gym, but I didn't really have a lot of replacement stuff ready.
Yeah. Okay. So you're just like scrambling.
I'm like,
for like,
oh, I guess God, we're gonna be bored. And I'm like, no. I'm like, I actually wanted to be bored. I wanted to get to the point that I got bored. I actually read a couple of books really, really quickly because I was so bored.
Yeah.
It's great. I read a strength book, actually.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And then in a way, like, okay, boredom.
So I
was
did find a replacement.
Yeah.
In that boredom.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, though, can you – boredom was the initial motivator, but can you say that those couple of days were really boring because you were doing things?
No, I was moving in a positive direction. And basically, after those 2 days, things seemed to get a little bit easier.
Yeah. And
but the first 2 days, I literally had a headache. Like I feel like I had a headache from just not getting enough dopamine. I'm not even kidding. I feel like – I literally put myself in a state because I was so hooked on my devices that I even was like a little irritated, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's understandable. You are going through some kind of neurochemical withdrawal. And I had a similar experience when I went to a treatment center in my early recovery where they confiscate your cell phone. And you can't have any electronic devices.
You know how scary that is, I think, for some people to hear.
And it was terrifying for me to hear that at first, too. But oh my God, was it a refreshing experience. I was so present at the treatment center. I was spending more time connecting with my peers there. I did a lot of reading as well and journaling and everything. It was so fantastic for me. Now, like you said, those first couple of days were rough. It's like, what? I can't play my games.
Where am I going to get my fix?
Totally.
Yeah.
But after those first couple of days, oh my Lord, like I was like quite reluctant to get it back, to be honest with you. And afterwards, I wish I had planned for it more because I had, you know, obviously done a lot of planning around, you know, not using substances, but I hadn't done any planning around what am I going to do with my cell phone back. And unfortunately, not right away, but pretty quickly.
Got it.
Back to where I was. And it's like, and I forgot that lesson.
I like the idea of looking at each app. I think that's really smart.
Yeah, looking at each app and then stuff like you know, making a conscious decision to leave your phone at home sometimes or leave it in a different room. Like I've – since the height of the pandemic when I first had that awareness that like, oh my God, I'm using my phone way too much. Mm-hmm. My phone is not allowed to enter my bedroom, like period.
Wow.
And I've been really good at that. That it
Whoa.
just does not. I got myself an old school alarm clock for the alarm function. And beyond that, I was like, what do I need this for? I'm like, I don't need it in my bedroom.
That's wild.
And my sleep improved so much from that because I wasn't getting like that blue light at night.
You're going to laugh at me. I'm like, I think I went the other direction.
You're like, more phone.
No, like I actually have an app that I meditate with.
And I used to do that too.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, okay, I still want to meditate at night. Like, silent meditation to myself.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, need it.
The thing with me was that I probably don't have to have my phone on me as much as I do. Mm. And when it's almost unconscious. Like, what would happen was this happened for like the first week. I tabulated it. I was actually counting it. It's hilarious. I'd pick up my phone, I'd unlock it, and I'd scroll to Facebook, and I'd do this without thinking about it. Mm. A thought. Like, this is like just an autonomic like response. Like, I literally just bloop, 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 and I'd look, and I'd be like, wait. And then I'd like, I'd go and I'd look at my little tally, and I think on the first day it was like, I think 10 or 13 times I did that without even thinking about it.
Which is kind of scary too. We were talking earlier about that feeling of lack of control. It's like, oh my God, like I've been now trained like a puppy to like, you know, ring the bell. Go for the app.
It's great. Yeah. So I think, you know, before you, to me, it just seems like it always goes back to mindfulness.
Yeah, absolutely. Being mindful of your relationship.
You know, so before I do something, what am I doing? Because if you're not even in the spot where you can even think about what you're doing, you're probably scrolling aimlessly, or like, I call it zombie mode.
Totally.
Zombie mode is like my term, I swear. Yeah. I'm sure someone else has come up with it before. But it happens with food. It happens with phones. It happens with porn. I'm sure it happens with everything. You're in this like zombie mode, and you're just kind of like, do-do-do. And like, next, you know, 2 hours gone by.
Yeah. It's like, what have I done these past couple
hours? So like, what am I doing? How is it going to serve me? Does it align with my goals?
Yeah.
And if I can't, like, if it's like a Sunday and I'm relaxing, okay, maybe, you know what, whatever. Like, yeah, you know what, relaxing aligns with my goals. But if it's a day where I'm supposed to be doing something else, or where I could be doing something else that's productive, I think there's like merit to like thinking about, you know, just being mindful about those choices, actually being aware of those choices. I think too many of us just make those choices without thinking about it, kind of willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we wake up at 50 with a heart attack.
Yep, right. And
no, I would, you know, extreme example. But
and I would just add to the mindfulness is like a degree of rigorous honesty and accountability too. Because I can fool myself into thinking of like, oh yeah, I'll totally be mindful about my relationship. I'll just be more conscious and I'll just like log out after half an hour and it'll be fine. Like, no. I have to be honest with myself that with certain apps or with certain games, I just do not have that relationship. And then if I don't have that relationship, like making that call, like, is this worth it? Is it really worth it? Or do I need to move it to my PC? Do I need to completely eliminate it? Like there are some games that I just do not play anymore. I know that I can't. It's like, to me, it was like my coke addiction. I can't regulate that shit.
In step work, which step is that? There's one.
Step one, like, admitting your powerlessness.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is, right? It's like, it's also a self-acceptance piece. Like, I am powerless to certain things. Me with random chance stuff, I am disaster.
Well, the random chance stuff, the research on intermittent reward is interesting. That gets you more...
hooked, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The occasional reward. Which
jerks.
Which is like the notifications on your app act as intermittent rewards. Like, oh, did somebody text me? Did somebody like my post? Did somebody... Yeah.
This was actually brought up to me by one of my clients. She says that she will... when she's really busy, she puts her phone in airplane mode.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually takes the time to limit notifications.
Yeah.
So there's certain things she will not even receive notifications for, and that's that. And I've been actually playing around with it.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. You know, we pull out our phones, usually because we receive a notification. And then we have this behavior that happens afterward, right? So anytime we, like, cut off these useless notifications or notifications that are just, like... Because it doesn't even have to be useful information. Like,
no.
It can just be, like, a... Oh, Discord! Like you got a message on Discord, or you got a phone.
Yeah. Do you need?
Do I need that notification? No. So maybe there's like a thought to just asking people, hey, like, to actually be mindful even what notifications you're getting, because that is headspace, right? Absolutely. At the end of the day, nothing is more valuable than the space between your ears.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? So why give it to a phone?
You're spending. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and that's another one of the suggestions from the book. I mean, he goes to the extent of deleting all or stopping all notifications. And again, I think there's like a bit of nuance there that, okay, from my kid, from my partner, I still want them to be able to.
Unless they make you mad, right?
Right. Yeah, then just right. Fuck them.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't get your notifications, honey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This isn't stonewalling. This is self-care.
Yeah, this is self-care. Yeah. Woo, gaslights run hot today. You're getting in the way of my self-care, babe.
Okay, have to ignore you, but sorry.
I'm so sorry. Thanks for putting up with me.
That's okay. That was hilarious. but yeah, I think there's a room for a bit of negotiation there. Like, you know, are text message notifications okay, or notifications from certain phone numbers? But yeah, kind of like different app notifications. I don't need that shit. I really don't. And yeah, I've gotten rid of them all as well. Again, other than text notifications, any other app. Well, then again, I hardly have any other apps on my phone now.
Okay,
and
so,
I've had huge success. Yeah. Like, I hope it's sustainable, but I've gone from spending roughly 3 hours per day on my phone to about 30 minutes.
Wow, you're destroying me.
It was a huge change,
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, like that's freed up so much time, and I've replaced that time. I play more games with my stepdaughter and my husband. I spend more time reading books. I spend more time doing the gardening out on the balcony.
Nice.
It's like all stuff that I'm like, rather do that than than Angry Birds.
Goodness. So where would you start? I mean, if you were someone who's starting from scratch.
Yeah.
And, you know, you listen to this podcast, you're like, oh, maybe my phone use is little. Are there ways or ideas or concepts that we can say to someone, like, start here?
I think it would be the checking in with your values piece and whether...
it's so individual, right?
Exactly. Somebody else who needs their phone more for work, like you do, only a little bit. Like, I need to check work emails on my phone a little bit, but not really a lot. Whereas somebody else, totally get it. They, you know, Instagram is part of their business strategy and...
I'm also like such a – I'm like a nice I like to stay on top of my clients. I'm like, yeah, I have an open door policy. You message me. I got you. I think there's – it's not often that people message you, but I think sometimes like – you know when you're having a hard time? It's not often the messaging someone or knowing – but knowing someone is there to hear you.
Is
relieves the stress.
Absolutely. Even if you never use it or rarely use it.
So, you know, it's there for that. So maybe check in with your values.
And then going through like program by program.
So you're taking an inventory.
You're taking the inventory of.
I don't know. I think people that go through, you know, step work, it's a lot like, because I haven't done it myself, but. I think it's courageous. I think it's intense self-work like any other kind, like when you go with like a therapist or with a counselor. Totally. And anytime you're taking time to courageously face parts of yourself that maybe you're not, you know, we want them to be.
Yeah, and
I think
that's point
meaningful
of
work.
Yeah, is to take that magnifying glass and like really have that uncomfortable, honest look.
Yeah.
So that would be one place I would start. And then also, like, going back to a point right near the beginning, the self-compassion piece is like, this isn't just you who is struggling with this. Most of society
I was going to go the same way.
Yeah, is struggling with this right now. You know, kind of cut yourself some slack while also, you know, having the courage, like you said, to do that hard work of examining your relationship.
I heard a really good tip from another podcast, which I really liked, when it came to like self-compassion. Sometimes, you know, people hear us talk and they're like, oh, yeah, love yourself. That's cool.
Mm.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Good luck with that, yeah.
Good luck with that, you know. And they were talking about someone who's like an overweight person. Mm. And like the way they speak to themselves, they would say, well, they would say, I'm a fat person. And that so – And that's kind of like a little disparaging, right? Mm-hmm. So her suggestion was, you know, start with, instead of going, I'm a in shape person, or I'm a lovely person, or I'm a nice, if you really don't feel that way, maybe go to a neutral term.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I am a person.
Yeah.
And that's progress.
Totally.
That's real. Like, I'm not asking you to kumbaya and be like,
No.
I'm going to like take all this programming I have of self-hatred and then just convert it over into this like loving thing, because it just doesn't happen that way.
No.
So maybe just start with, I am a struggling person, or, you know, instead of like, I'm a jerk, or I'm a piece of, you know what, you know, like, I'm sure.
Yeah.
When you put that magnifying glass, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. But you got to start somewhere.
Right. And that, yeah, to your point around negative self-labeling, that the, you know, maybe eventually the goal is positive self-talk. But as you said, even more kind of neutral language, or language that shows like some kind of journey, yeah, is, you know, more helpful
even,
than
even a
I'm
step
a piece
in
of
the
shit.
Right direction.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
The best term I ever heard, actually, because I at one point was dating a figure competitor.
Hmm.
And her off season, she would get, quote unquote, a little fatter.
Hmm.
But she's like, I don't call myself fat. She's like, I call myself fluffy.
Okay, yeah, that's, I like that.
And I
that's
love that term, because yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a lot more endearing and a lot more loving than saying, oh, I'm, you know, like, it's weird. There's like a connotation. There's a weight with that word.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. So just being careful with the language you're using towards yourself.
Jeez. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think we went over a lot today.
I think so, too.
So Jordan Peterson.
Oh, boy.
The guy's a dick, right? He's a super dick. Super dick. Super dick. Throbbing. Right, like that's
you can tell I'm already getting kind of like, oh,
right no he's a hero. No, he's a dick. Which one is it, Matthew?
How about he's complicated?
No, he's,
how about we're
all my Twitter people say he's a dick, though. My echo chamber,
we're all complicated.
But I don't want to have a nuanced discussion. I just want to believe what I think, because all my friends say that that's how I should feel. So
right. And I think that we all do that with certain people. I can
just see you rolling your eyes inside your head right now. You're just like, Seb, really? Really? I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So yeah, we're kind of hinting at what is going to be an upcoming topic around people that we see portrayed like in media, in the news, et cetera. Having sort of two-dimensional, either in a positive direction or in a negative direction, kind of views on them. And
heroes.
Yeah, versus
and
villains.
Villains.
Yeah, yeah.
On the next episode of Maury Povich. Okay, sorry.
That was Jerry.
What?
That was Jerry. That was Jerry Springer. Jerry.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I'm taking you back.
There's like only maybe 20% of people that got that.
Yeah. We old.
Matthew.
Or
I have good
or
news.
We're somewhat more advanced in our lifespan.
You
again,
are.
Reframe.
We have checked the tests. You are not the father.
Oh, thank God.
Thank you, everyone, for checking out Man's Junk. I am Sebastian. If you want to find me on Instagram and Creep or whatever you like, Train with Seb. Like literally TRAIN with like the full word Seb. This is my co-host,
Matthew Beasley, and you will not find me on Instagram because I'm not there.
Wow. I feel like you one-up me right at the end here.
Boom.
Have a wonderful day wherever you're doing, and we will hopefully talk to you soon.